So, Hobie, your choice is number one. You're going to fly a high approach and then make a steep descent to this runway at night so that you can stay over any kind of obstacles. How would you walk someone through that? How do you do something like that safely when you weren't prepared for it from the very beginning?
I think one of the clues in looking at the airport diagram is you have a displaced threshold. That should be a flag. The reason you typically have displaced thresholds is that obstacles stick through the 20-to-1 plane. So that tells you, even if you looked at nothing else, that tells you there's a problem. Now, the steep approach might be a misnomer because we're going to fly a normal approach to a point, say, 1,000 feet down the runway. So that process is that we have to visually identify something that's going to give us that point, whether we do it by scaling the runway, and then we're going to fly a normal visual approach to that point. Now, that would be steep to the runway threshold, but it's not steep to our intended touchdown point.
And then how do you judge how well that's going? I mean, it's fairly straightforward when we're thinking about our, you know, stabilized approach and sort of a go, no-go point when we're talking about a threshold and a nice bar of green lights. Now I'm going to a point in the darkness partway down the runway with white lights on the side. How do I judge whether this is going okay or not?
I mean, you have to pick a point on the runway, and it's the same visual process, right? That point needs to be constant in the windshield. Once that we know we're safely over the runway and clear of the obstruction, then we can steepen the approach. But initially, you need to pick a visual aiming point and track that's a little farther down the runway.
Is everyone in agreement that of all these options here is the best choice? Is that what everyone would do?
I'm tempted by option two. I mean, it's already dark. Flying the pattern does not change that. I would want to overfly the airport and make left traffic in a tight pattern, and I think it would just be easier, especially for a relatively inexperienced pilot, than the speed and altitude control required to make a steep straight-in approach.
Anybody else on that?
Yeah, I like option two as well for similar reasons. It brings you over the airfield environment and gives you an ability to assess the environment below you, just your altitude, where things are on the runway, sort of get your situational awareness for the layout, get your visual set. It's at night, so maybe your eyes can acclimate to the field below you. So I favor that option as well.
I like the idea of the situational awareness. As an instructor teaching people at night, oftentimes when we go to an airport and it's dark, they don't want to descend, so we end up being really, really high. And if you have them fly the pattern the way that they always fly the pattern, look at having the runway as a visual reference, I find that helps people making their decisions with the descent.
Those are all valid points. One of the things that we have to discuss is that is not going to be a smooth downwind. We're close to the terrain. We have gusty winds. The airplane's going to be pounding around pretty good. That hill rises rapidly to the south, so you're going to have lift over that hill all the way around. So it's not as straightforward as you would think it is on the. And that was my reason for not choosing that, because unless you've pounded around in the mountains, you don't quite know what you're going to get into.
And you're based nearby, over the hill, so you know this airport.
I fly
really
that
well.
A lot. I fly it at night. I've flown that instrument approach at night. I've flown the other one at night. There again, that is a significant obstacle from the runway.
Well, and that brings up the entire point that is it a good idea to try to fly at night into an airport that you're completely unfamiliar with? We're coming up with local knowledge that isn't even available in the chart supplement, unless you really know where to look for it. So it might be that it is just a general, just as a general operating rule, is don't fly into some place at night that you've not first flown into in the daytime.
Boy, I support that wholeheartedly, Tom. And you notice in the discussion, I pointed out driving in this instance, once it was dark, was by far the safest option.
I think it's possible to overthink this. To me, one and two are almost equal, with a slight benefit to number two because it allows you to eyeball the runway completely as you make the turn. So it gives you that slight advantage. It's a long runway, 5,000 feet. So if you land long, even from the straight end, you're going to have plenty of room to get a 172 stopped. One thing I would do, though, is to slow the airplane down. We say slow the descent, and that's good, but I would also slow it down to some reasonable approach speed. That will give you more time to think it through and to eyeball the runway, and it will also keep your turn radius tight if you're worried about terrain you can't see. And then from that left downwind, you should be able to see everything. You'll certainly see the threshold lights, and you can just set up a good visual approach.
Now, one thing we're not talking about here yet is that whole black hole illusion. If we're slowing down plus a headwind, now our path over the ground has become that much slower while we're descending. We're sort of setting ourselves up, suckered into being low and flat, especially because we don't have the visual of the world not going by nearly as quickly as it was before. I'm just wondering about people's experience with those kind of airports, and not, you know, it's clearly caught the pilot by surprise that there wasn't a VASI or a PAPI. And as Hobie pointed out, there's a reason they can't put one in because of the hill. And that should have been a big flag for this. But people's experience with those kind of black hole approaches.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about this particular situation. And this pilot has been to this airport before. He's presumably is going to know that there's terrain around and to be wary of the terrain. I think that the technology in this G-1000 airplane is going to be especially beneficial to this pilot with the sort of terrain warnings that he's likely to have. I'm assuming this airplane does not have synthetic vision, which would be a huge benefit in the situational awareness here. But even without it, I think that options one or two still work. Paul's got an excellent point that this 5,000-foot runway in a solo Cessna 172 landing into a stiff headwind, I mean, you could make an almost vertical approach with the, you know, at slow speed, full flaps, and it would be almost a parachute approach to this runway. I think either one or two could be done safely, but I prefer two just for the ability to have eyes on. And with seeing all the runway lights and an early base turn for a touchdown somewhere, you know, around the midpoint of the runway, I think is perfectly safe and reasonable to do. And I'll differ from Hobie in that I'm not at all attracted to drive on this evening. I think that flying there on a perfect VFR night is a reasonable thing to do.
Well, let's pick up a little bit on technology, because this plane falls into kind of an interesting middle ground where it's a G-1000, which sort of, you know, gives you that allure of I've got a lot of technology protecting me, but it has no synthetic vision. It has no highway in the sky. It's one of the earlier model ones. And even if you got a terrain warning at night, there would be that cognitive dissonance, right, of like you're descending for the airport and it starts going terrain, and you can see I've got the whole runway. I got the lights in front. Like, there's a moment of how can that possibly be true? And
well, that's why I think there's a two-bladed axe with the terrain warning on this, because if you have the terrain warning engaged and you make this visual and you make the turn to base, you're going to get a terrain warning. Mm-hmm. And now you have to interpret that. It's like Jipwiz going off. Oh, that's not real. That's not for us. But you have to interpret this and understand that, okay, that shows terrain, but not a factor for me. So it goes both ways.
Yeah, you'd probably even get it on the downwind if you flew the downwind.
One of the things that people neglect, you know, the old rule was flying around VFR at night, you didn't go anywhere you didn't see lights because it's either clouds or hills. There is one trap in a descent, and it's possible to descend on top of the hill. In other words, if you're doing a steep enough descent, you will see the lights until you see trees. So it is in a descent can be deceptive, and there was a King Air 200 accident up in Ball Mountain in Rangeley, and that's exactly what he did. And that one was he shot the approach and he elected to circle, but he's outside the circling box and he's looking at the runway lights and he settled right on top of the mountain. So there is a possibility.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also, you know, it occurs to me sitting here, even the VASI or PAPI being there, there's a lack of understanding and actually a recent change that's probably germane here in the chart supplement about how much protection that gives you. I mean, it's only going to give you protection within 4 miles of the runway. Unless published in the chart supplement otherwise, it might be less. And it might not be 10 degrees left or right, of course, even if it's there. And so being aware of those things or the, you know, the go around at night, I mean, just processing yourself that the last 2,000 feet of those lights are going to change color gives you at least a like, hey, I got to land in the white lights at least. And then I got 2,000 feet, you know, of orange lights to run out in. That's going to be hard to judge at night, but with the lights, it becomes trivial.
Yeah, just a caution and distress what Paul was saying. You know, that technology and that G1000 can be tremendously helpful at the right time and incredibly distracting at the wrong time. And so if you don't know how that terrain warning is set and what's triggering it to go off, you could be perfectly fine, perfectly normal. But if you don't know that, you could find some anxiety building. You'd find yourself getting a little stressful when actually it's you're doing just fine. So knowing how that's set and it would be really critical. It wouldn't be the very first time that you decide to use the G1000 for, you know, this vision or this terrain warning, right, at night.
Let's talk a little bit about the use of instrument information as a VFR pilot. I mean, you're not trained in this material, but there's a lot to be said here. The very fact that you can't fly this approach to this runway at night, that's forbidden, is a huge flag if you know to look for it.
Well, yeah, that's something I was going to ask the other instructors here. Are you routinely teaching VFR pilots that the instrument charts exist and how to use them? It's something, frankly, I've not done. I spent most of my time teaching IFR pilots, so it's been a little out of the scope of what I do. But are others teaching VFR-only pilots how to interpret instrument charts?
I'm not.
There again, because of the terrain I work in, it's part of the night checkout for a new pilot. And they don't need to read them to the level an IFR pilot does, but obstructions are much better depicted. The other thing I stress is obstacle clearance departures, and that is also very important at night in the mountains.
Right, I agree, and I think that the night departures are a lot more hazardous than the night arrivals because you don't have the benefit of seeing the runway lights during your departure. One option that occurs to me that's not listed here is overflying the airport at high altitude and then spiraling down. You know, I think that would be an attractive proposition on a night landing in a place that you knew to be at the bottom of a bowl. One thing that's been suggested here that I don't want to leave unchallenged is the idea that, if I heard correctly, was that you wouldn't go to an airport at night that you hadn't been to in the day. I mean, that just seems vastly and needlessly restrictive. FedEx and UPS couldn't operate if they could only fly places that they had been to in the daytime.
You FedEx know, so. And UPS are operating on a different level than a newly minted Cessna 172 VFR.
And they also
pilot.
Have to be airport qualified. But
I mean, come on. It's like you won't go anywhere at night that you haven't been in the daytime. Why would you tie your hands that way?
Because you are operating to a more conservative risk management paradigm than someone who doesn't use that. I agree with you. I mean, I've gone into airports at night. I've flown passengers into airports at night that I've never been to. But it's a slightly higher risk than not having flown in during the day. So I think it's over-conservative, but I don't consider it irrational.
I'm going to take a little bit of a minute intermediate stand here, but I think I would go on a trip where I was doing an arrival into an airport like that. I think where we need to go is that there's a lot more homework to do if you're going to go in at night. The second thing is that, at least with people I'm working with, I discourage training flights in these remote airports at night because, let's say there's a problem. There's nobody there. Could be something as simple as a flat tire, I mean. But the issue is, I think, in the mountainous terrain, when you start operating at night, you want to stay in the bigger airports. You want attended airports. There's just a lot more risk. So a training flight where it's not necessary, I consider that risk unnecessary. Whereas if I was making arrival, then okay, you deal with it.
Hey, Dave, just to address your idea of spiraling down, I thought about that, but then I also thought one of the things that I would think about is the potential to get disoriented at night, especially in hilly or mountainous terrain, and to spiral down depending on how tight it is. So I would give that serious consideration as a relatively young pilot that, you know, doing that at night would be a little bit different than doing it in the day, obviously.
Probably, especially unless you had practiced a spiraling descent too. I mean, that's, you know, comparing the straight in to the downwind, but a very steep approach versus a slightly standard close in downwind. At least the downwind is going to be more familiar, more normalization to what somebody is used
to.
But the
advantage that the spiral offers that isn't there on the downwind is if you overfly the runway, turn crosswind to downwind, those runway lights are not visible. in this spiral, they're visible throughout the descent and into the downwind. And that's why it's appealing to me.
But only if you fly that directly over the runway. You know, option two, I wouldn't fly that directly over the runway. I would offset the runway a bit so that I could keep those runway lights in sight.
Agreed. Upwind, crosswind, downwind.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, going back to the spiral, I think it has a point. And the spiral would be something I would use in an airport that has relatively high minimum altitudes all around it. The safest place to descend is going to be over the airport, obviously. In this instance, we have a document that tells us altitudes I can use on the way in, which changes that equation a little bit.
And I'll concede David's point that maybe it is too restrictive to say don't go somewhere at night you've never been in the daytime. But I do it with Hobie's caveat that you do your homework. I made that earlier comment because Hobie, living very near the airport in question here, said several things that either are only available on the IFR chart or hidden in the chart supplements, or in some cases are just local knowledge. And so my first reaction is there's a lot to learn about this airport before I go there. Maybe I ought to go there visually first, especially if a pilot is trained on how to interpret the information, the additional information that's on the IFR chart. Yes, that's a manageable risk to fly there at night. But it does take, as Hobie said, more homework.
Right. And this pilot in the scenario had been there in the daytime before, so that makes me feel better about it.
Of course, you always do have the situation that you've been somewhere in the daytime and you landed on one of the runways or something that was a common procedure, and then you show up there at night and the winds are now in the one direction you've never landed before, or you know, you never knew that there wasn't a visual slope indicator to this runway because you never needed it before. You could see everything around you quite clearly. So, you know, you have that kind of phenomena. I'm curious a little bit about the downwind landing, which everyone at the table has rejected given the winds. Let's suppose the winds were just a little bit out of the north, essentially. So it was a very light tailwind, but you knew that you could overfly the airport, pick up a good visual approach, and land with a little bit of a tailwind. Where does that fall for folks?
I wouldn't do it in this scenario just because there's no need to. Options one and two are plenty safe and plenty reliable, and there's no need to add the additional risk of a tailwind, you know, pretty stiff one at night, even if it were slightly lighter.
Yeah, what are you getting out of the deal? Well, you're getting a higher touchdown speed, and what are you mitigating? As I said before, I think it's possible to overthink this. I don't think the risk is that great if you take reasonable precautions, and that's what one and two as choices do.
That makes perfect sense. And I think that, you know, putting that together, what I'm hearing around the table, one and two, it's almost a wash which one you're going to do. And I think we could probably convince each other that, oh, if we were both in the airplane together and the other person chose, I'm going to do this one. Okay, I understand why you're doing that. I'd be okay with it in general. But the real, you know, learning point is that this pilot didn't expect to show up at night, and so they were missing that key part of their preparation, you know, the planning that you were talking about, Hobie. So now they were caught sleeping, as it were. They were caught without a critical piece of information that landing 3-5 at night was missing all sorts of assistance that we just routinely assume are there.